Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. My name is Denny Griffin, and welcome to the Meet the Author Show. And for the next half hour, I will be your host. And tonight, my guest is Lisa J. Peck. And Lisa is the author of the book, Stop Marrying Mistakes. And this is a topic I think is going to be a lot of fun to discuss. And after having the courage to face her own fears and work through them, Lisa set new standards for her life and is now known as the Step It Up Queen. She has inspired more than a million people with her life story and capacity to get things done. She is a loving mother of 8 children and knows how to maximize time, energy, and effort to get results. Lisa, welcome to Meet the Author.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I almost chuckled here when I saw the mother of 8 children knows how to get things done. I think that's a hashtag to be it, right? let's start off, if you would you explain to us a little bit about your book, about Stop Marrying Mistakes, what caused you to write it, and then we'll discuss more about it and the details of it.
Great. You know, this book is a little bit different than a lot of the other books that I've published. I was approached by Dr. Kevin Skinner to write the book, and I had gone through a lot of his classes and trainings. He's from Growth Climate, and they do a lot of educational programs and stuff that help you understand the people you're working with and are surrounded with and your family and how to interface with people with principle. And I had taken his classes, all of the classes, just hungry for the information as I was in a relationship that wasn't working. I was seeking out information, wanting to know how to make my life better, my children's life better, and the information that they had was just phenomenal. And when I did go through the divorce, it was the principles that I learned from him that just made it so much better. It helped me understand how to help heal my children, how to get through it, how to not take things personal, how not to get triggered when the ex is calling, all hosts of wonderful things. So when he approached me to take his material in his classes and put it in a book, I was really hungry to do it because I knew how important this information was and how vital it was for me to get my family off to healing and to, you know, really having a great life. And I wanted to provide that opportunity to more people than what they could just reach with their classes. So that's really how we got started, was doing that.
And the title of the book, now, did you consider other titles, or was this the title right from the get-go?
We did consider other titles. There was some titles that were already taken. We thought it would be funny. I'm now wishing that maybe I had done a different title, because a lot of people who read my book are still in a relationship, still trying to make it work, and the other partner can get a little offended from Stop Marrying Mistakes. But we were really trying to focus on those people who keep on getting married and divorced and remarried and just doing that whole host and learning how to not make the same mistakes, because unless you do your work, unless you really look at what you're doing before you get into marriage, you typically will marry the same kind of person, but, you know, with a different face.
Yeah, you know, and it's you mentioned that, and I find that not necessarily in marital situations, but I know people who seem to maybe aren't real good handling finances, and they get out of one mess, maybe through bankruptcy, and get a clean slate. And it seems like the next, 2 years later, you hear from them, they're filing again because they did the same thing over again. And you wonder, you scratch your head and say, you know, after 2 or 3 times, wouldn't you think you'd learn your lesson, be it how to handle your money, how to pick a mate, or whatever.
You would think so, but it's really not that common to do that, because it takes a lot of work and a lot of self-reflection and a lot of awareness. And a lot of people don't want to put the energy into it.
And it's certainly, you know, when you're talking about marriage, it certainly is one area that that warrants the time, I think, or the energy, as you say. It's an endeavor. If you're going to put your energy into something, that would be one of the things you'd want to put it into, I would think.
Oh, I would really think so, because marriage is a big thing, and getting out of marriage is another big thing. It's not easy. It's not pleasant. It has a lot of side effects, so you kind of want to put some energy into it. It would be wise if you did that instead of just jumping in and going for the fairy tale romance that a lot of the media teaches that we should be doing.
Yeah, now when you talk with people, or people who read your book and so forth, or people you've met that have a history of multiple divorces, do you find that they tend to marry the same personality? What is it that draws them to a particular maybe type of individual that it's just not a good match?
Either they will marry the same personality, or they marry the exact opposite, kind of as a reactionary thing, going, oh, that was such a mistake. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go to the exact opposite. And either way can be really detrimental. One of the reasons they do that is there's some psychological reason that's drawing them to it, something that they haven't quite figured out. A lot of women, for example, are really attracted to the bad boy. And they just find that they think that they can save them, or men. A lot of men like to save damsels in distress.
Uh-huh.
And they just love that boost, that self-confidence feeling they get when they're being the hero. Woohoo, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to rescue this girl. And then they get a little bit tired of that once they get into the marriage, because they realize, you know, the lady's needy or clingy. And with the ladies, you know, if they do the bad boy, well, the bad boy is not so tameable and they have some side effects.
Mm-hmm.
Versus learning how to have the healthy relationship. And healthy relationships they don't have as high highs, but they don't have as low lows either. And some people are just addicted to the adrenaline from having relationships, you know, going up and down. And they don't realize they're addicted to it. A lot of times that has been created from their childhood of origin, just watching the trauma in their family.
Did you find any particular age groups or anything, or of any specific background, or is it just like across the board, anybody can find themselves making the same mistakes over and over again?
Oh, anybody can. It is not discriminatory. You would think that you would learn once you got older, and sometimes you might be a little bit slower about getting into relationships, but unless you really, really sit down and go, okay, what is it that I need to deal with? What are my issues? What am I attracted to? What's healthy? What's not healthy? You're going to make the same mistakes.
And do you find that people are reluctant, be it the male or the female, I suppose, that finds him or herself in a bad situation, and perhaps for the second or third or whatever time, do you think the more frequently it happens, they are less apt to want to do anything about it, because maybe they say, geez, people think I'm the loser here. You know, if I get divorced for the third time or the fourth time, people think it's me. It's not really me. It's who I'm hooking up with. But would they tend to maybe be less anxious to sever the relationship, afraid it would look bad on their part?
It seems like there are two, you know, yeah, people feel like a loser if they're getting divorced for the second, third, fourth time. That is not a pleasant feeling. It's just like, oh, geez, I can't do this right. But there's also the flip side of it. If they've already gone through the divorce, they know they can survive. Whereas people haven't gone through a divorce before, there's a lot more anxiety and fear of the unknown. So, you know, it can be easier to just say, oh, bag it, I can go be on my own, it's funner to be single, whatever, I'm out of here. And sometimes there's a lot less commitment into making a relationship work, and
mm-hmm.
just blaming the other person, going, why do I always marry losers? I worked with one gentleman, and he had been through, I think, 6 marriages, and he just going, I just got to find the perfect woman. When the perfect woman can arrive, then everything's going to be happy. And he was unwilling to look at himself at that time of what he was doing and why he wasn't being the perfect husband.
Wow, six marriages, huh?
Yeah.
That's a pretty impressive figure right there.
Well, it's like, would you just date, not marry for a while?
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable option when you when you're running that kind of a history.
Yeah, it'd be a lot cheaper.
Now, how long did it take you to write the book? How long did it actually take to do when you started the manuscript to completion and to publishing?
Oh, this book was long. I think it took me about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. It was a lot longer than a lot of my other books. There was a lot more challenges to it because the material that my partner, Dr. Kevin Skinner, gave to me, he's a PhD, and he wrote like a PhD,
uh-huh.
and it was like a dissertation. So it took me a lot more time to go through and make it user-friendly and fun to read, and so the general masses could read it.
And
you know, some of the stuff gets a little deep and complicated, and I wanted to make it so just anybody could read it, and they could apply it immediately to their life.
Yeah, was it a fun project? Did you enjoy it? Overall, I mean, everything has its moments, but generally speaking, did you enjoy the writing?
I enjoyed some of it. Some of the times I was banging my head, so.
Yeah.
It was really one of those, you know, some of the times it just flew and I was in the zone and I loved it. Other times it was like, ah! And other, you know, especially when it was a co-project, I had a hard time reaching my partner because he had a full practice and a radio show. And I'd be going, okay, I'm really good at writing about the dysfunctional relationship. And when we were writing about the healthy, I had no clue. And I'd be going, help me, Kevin, please. And so I would be dictating as he was driving to work. I'd figure out exactly when he would drive to work. And so that got a little bit frustrating.
I can imagine. Oh, God.
But other times we'd laugh, and he'd laugh because I was like, okay, I know what the unhealthy relationship looks like. And he had no clue. And he had come from a healthy marriage, and they never had any problems. And he had been a therapist to hundreds and hundreds of divorced people, and there was stuff in there that I'd just be scratching my head going, I can't believe you wrote that. That's not the way it is for divorced people. So it was, we would laugh.
So he got a little education.
Oh, he did. He did. And, you know, and being female and male, there's always some interesting dynamics with that.
Oh, sure. I bet there is. I was just thinking as you were talking about trying to convert, if you will, the PhD to a reader friendly text. I hadn't thought about that before, but I could see where that would be quite if a person had never done that would be a challenge.
It was, because with dissertations they write really wordy, past tense. They go on and on. They say the same things over and over again. They make it really complicated. It's like, oh, okay. You know, so I had to do a lot of work. I think at sometimes I thought it would be easier if I would have just created it myself and not have had a little bit of text to start with.
Was your relationship with the doctor, though, such that there was no resentment or anything about, you know, changing some of this? I mean, he didn't take offense that in a little different form.
Kevin was awesome. He was awesome the whole way through. We had a wonderful relationship getting through it. He really is a pillar example of what healthy looks like and how to create relationships. There was no problems. If I explained to him this is the way it would be better with the writing, no problem. And he would explain to me what the research said and how to fix the facts and all that. We just never had a problem.
Well, that's great, because I was in one, co-author relationship before, and I was fortunate, similar to you. We had a couple of minor issues, but I could see that if you didn't have a good match there, that could be an animal trying to write something if you had two total, and neither party was willing to give.
Oh, it would have. Yeah, I'd be very careful who you pick your co-author to be. And with, you know, we had an agreement that I was pretty much doing most of the work and he was providing the material. So it was really quite easy that way, and he just provided the research, made sure everything was accurate. So that worked splendid, and he didn't have ego. But if you have ego involved, I can see it could be a big nightmare.
Yeah. Co-authoring, I guess, you know, there are times when it is the sensible thing to do. But like you say, I would certainly advise anyone who's thinking about that to, like you said, be pretty cautious and give a lot of consideration to who you're teaming up with.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about how it was going to work out and what it would look like, and it did change a bit as part because he wanted to put more time into it, but he didn't have the time. So, you know, we were very flexible with each other on that.
Lisa,
and I just said, let me do more of it then.
Yeah. Let's give out to the listeners any information you have regarding contact information, where they could find more information about you or your book or to order your book.
You can find out about my book at StopMarryingMistakes.com. And at the website, StopMarryingMistakes.com, there's tons of free worksheets and handouts and that kind of stuff to really help people assist through the different processes and the stages of divorce, you know, whether he's picking up the pieces to dating again and what to look at or even how to deal with stress or depression. So there's a lot of free goodies there. It's StopMarryingMistakes.com.
When you have divorces that involve children, okay, when there's children involved, and if you're looking at or talking about people who have had multiple, you know, over and over making that same mistake, marrying the mistake, then you've got children who may know two or three different stepmothers or stepfathers, as the case may be. What does that do to a relationship, do you think? I mean, would it tend to help to strengthen the relationship with the next husband or next wife, or would it maybe cause more stress, or is it kind of a neutral thing?
It is definitely not neutral, and it's one of the major reasons when I was having those black days on the book, I would think about, you know, if I could prevent just one more divorce or give tools to a parent to help heal the kids. Mm-hmm. I was willing to go through whatever it took with this book because it is dramatic effect on the children. They have they'll develop attachment problems because they don't know who to trust. They bond with people, and then they're ripped away, and then somebody else is there, and it is really, really confusing for children and can cause just a host of problems that is not good for our society. It's not good for the kids. It's not good for the parents. It's one of those things that I'm very, very passionate about is being there for the kids and helping them go through the divorce too, because a lot of people focus on themselves and healing themselves through the divorce, and they kind of forget that the kids are hurting even more than the adults are because the kids don't have the language. So bonding with new step-parents can be really, really a tricky situation, and in fact, that's the number one reason the second marriages and third and fourth marriages fail is because of the children and not being able to create a cohesive home.
Yeah, so that is a stress factor, right, the stress on the relationship.
Oh, it's the number one.
Oh.
Money's way up there, and the children, it's just huge. That is something that you really need to be addressing, the kids' needs, making sure you communicate on your parenting styles before you get married and figure out how you're going to handle it and what it will look like. It's just huge.
If you had to give advice to a person, we talked a minute ago laughingly about the guy with the six marriages, you know, and how about dating for a while. if you had to give advice to either a man or a woman, we won't discriminate here, but who was after a relationship or in between and looking for a next spouse and had children involved, would you talk to them or give them different advice? And would your advice be more to stress thinking of the children and thinking before they leapt into something else? You know, that there's more than them involved, that they really need to consider the impact if they make another mistake, what impact that could have on the kids.
Yeah. Number one factor after you get through the divorce, you have the divorce decree signed, the money's figured out, and you're at least surviving, is focusing on healing those kids. each kid heals differently. Knowing what the common behaviors are of children, I have a list on my book. I think there's a lot of those free handouts has lists. Knowing what the common behaviors are, knowing how to interface with it, knowing how to be there for your kids, and each kid will heal differently. They do it on their own time. They do it on their own speed, but it's very, very important to get them to talk, get them to know that it's not their fault, and get them tools and mechanisms on how to help heal, because they're going through the drama too. And most of the divorced people, one of the people at least made the decision. The other one probably saw that it was coming. And so they have a lot more heads up on it. The children are normally blindsided by it, and they really, really need to know that there's safety. If the kids are young, keep them close. Make sure you spend time with them. If they're teenagers, make sure that you are getting them to talk. One of the things that I often did with my kids, because I had six at the time when I got divorced, was with the boys, I would go do something active with them to get them to talk to me, shooting hoops or walking or something like that, because boys typically don't like to have it where mom's staring at them. Girls, I would put them in the car and just drive around. They would talk my ear off. But it was good to get them to talk and to get them to talk about their emotions. If kids, research has proven, if they don't talk about their emotions, typically in about 2 years' time, you're going to have a very different child on your hands that's going to be acting out in ways that you really do not want them acting out. So it's critical to make sure that the kids are taken care of emotionally, physically, and they're all there before you even think about dating.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking, and it's something that I don't think about all that often, and I'm glad you mentioned it, about the impact on the children and how they suffer and hurt in addition to the parent when there's a divorce. And I remember some movies that I've seen, the fiction, I assume, but where there's domestic problems with stepchildren involved. And I know I've, unfortunately, when I was in police work, some of the calls I used to respond to were domestics, and there would be children, stepchildren involved. And I remember some of those arguments, both the fictional to type and the real thing, where I've heard one parent or the other, generally it tended to be the man, I guess, the stepfather, arguing and telling the wife in front of the child or children that it was all the kid's fault. In other words, it wasn't necessarily something the wife had done. It was the fact that he couldn't deal with the kids. It's her kids, your kids, not our kids. And I was just thinking about that as you were talking, and I suppose that could, depending on the individual child, have a very devastating effect, you know, that this whole deal was your fault.
Yeah, children statistically will naturally assume it's their fault whether they even hear it or not.
Mm-hmm.
My kids got really sick of hearing from me, I know, it's not my fault, I know. But I drilled it in them because kids will assume that it is. And that's devastating to their development.
I was going to say, this could have a long-reaching, serious impact, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It will affect their ability to bond. It will affect their ability to get married. It will affect their ability to have healthy relationships in the workforce or even in, private. It's huge. It's very, very important to make sure that you're there for your kids and you're spending the time. And it's not easy because your world is falling apart. It is not easy at all. And sometimes the kids, when they're sharing their feelings, is, I hate you, Mom. I can't believe you did this. You ruined my life. How dare you? You're selfish. All that kind of stuff. And it's up to the adult to be the adult and let them vent it. Let them have their say.
Yeah. So do you recommend in a situation like that that the people should involve a counselor or get? I mean, not every parent, I don't think, would be capable necessarily of handling that issue the right way. And because of the potential devastating effect, if they're in a position financially or through some type of community resources, should involved? Is it worth that?
I would definitely recommend them getting some kind of help, either getting the therapy, counseling, or I talked to Kevin a while, and we have a CD set. It's called Thriving After Divorce and this book. And he said if people went all the way through the book and they went through the 20 hours on our CDs, that was just as good as doing any kind of therapy. If they actually did all the exercises and listened to it and applied it, it would be there. We were trying to provide material that would be cheaper than the ongoing therapy. And it also depends on the severity of what the kid's problems are and what the situation is. I do think if it's within the normal realm, you know, the CDs and the book and doing all those exercises would be excellent. If it's a little bit more severe, definitely get a counselor involved.
Lisa, I don't know where the time's gone to, but we're running short already. I'd like to spend the last 4 or 5 minutes we have talking about writing. Is that okay?
Great.
Okay, because people who are listening to the show now, and we'll play it back through the archives, are aspiring writers in some cases and looking to hear from people that have been there and done that, some of the thoughts and comments. I'd like to start out with, do you think it's a good idea, or did you ever join like a writer's group? Do you think that's a worthwhile thing? It could either be a critique group or whatever, but do you think writer's groups are a resource that a new author might want to consider?
I love my critique group. I've been in it for 16 years, and I would not have the books, the quality that they are. I probably would not even get published if it wasn't for my critique group, because they have different perspectives, different ways of looking at things, and they can be brutal sometimes, but it has been phenomenally helpful.
Yeah.
And you learn how to develop a little bit more thick skin, but learning that, you know, the sentence I thought just made phenomenal sense, they're like, this doesn't make any sense at all, or what about this, and what about that, and you'd be offensive if you said this, and I'm offended about that. It's just wonderful to get that kind of input and insight and having the readers there. And also, you know, being around other authors, if they know how to spin a phrase better than me, hey, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. And generally speaking, I don't know, and it's none of my business what dues are or anything for your particular group, but I think in most cases you can find a pretty decent writer's group, critique group. And it's not going to kill you, you know, financially. I know I belong to one that's $35 a year. I belong to another with a $75. But, I mean, to get the kind of feedback and assistance and, in a lot of cases, the encouragement that you can get from a group of your peers, I think is well worth the relatively few dollars it costs.
It is. Mine happens to be free. It's a group of us that we found each other at a community. You know, it was the League of Writers, and we just got together, and we've had people come and go, but the core of us have been together for 15 years, and we just agreed to go and be there, and they're some of my best friends, too, so sometimes, and sometimes we're angry, so but we've learned how to be adult about it, and it's just wonderful to have. I love the deadlines that it gives me, because I'm not going to show up at critique group and all the sacrifices it takes for me to get away from 8 kids without having some work and something to be read. So I think it's really good on a lot of different levels.
And 15 years, that's longer than a lot of marriages last.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, we're down to our last minute. I'd like to close with, if you would, if a new writer approached you right now and asked you for one tip, one what you consider the most important tip for a new writer, how would you answer?
I would answer by them knowing what they want to do, what's the end result, because it's not always the traditional world that's the best way to get published. Know what is the purpose of the book. Where do you want to sell it? What do you want to do with the book? Really analyze what the motive of the book is before you get caught up into it has to be the traditional or it has to be self-published. Really analyze each project and what the purpose is and the end result is before you figure out which path you want to go on.
And that would be excellent advice. I couldn't agree more. Lisa, our time is up. I want to thank you very, very much. It's been most pleasant and most enlightening. And again, the book is Stop Marrying Mistakes, and you can go to www.stopmarryingmistakes.com, Lisa J. Peck. Lisa, thank you very much, and the best of luck with your book.
Thank you.
Okay, good night now. And thanks for listening, and have a great evening.